Hello, everybody. It's Jake, and I'm back.
What's going on, buddy? How you been?
Mate, how are you? Oh, not bad. You miss me?
Yeah, I do.
You've been good?
Yeah, I know you've been doing good.
It's been going well. I think like we were saying before, it got all a bit hectic, didn't it, a couple of months ago, and just new jobs, lives, shit like that. But yeah, as long as you have me back, I'm here again.
You're the OG, man. Anytime. So you guys don't get to see the new movie for, what, 7 weeks or something?
Yeah, it's like another 6 weeks. It's not till the beginning of November.
So yeah, this is an interesting episode because one of us has seen it and one of us doesn't. It's not that you don't see it in 5 days. You don't see it for over a month.
So I think we can well and truly say this one should be spoiler-free, shouldn't it? Because if it's
I'll start by telling you this. So at the very end...
I was going to say, because if it's not spoiler-free, I'm flying over there and kicking the fucking shit out of you. So, we don't get it for a while. We're still in lockdown and that, which, you know, is what it is. But I know that we spoke a bit before this and things. And, yeah, I'm basically going to know the whole film by the time it comes out, I reckon, the way that things are going at the moment.
Yeah, it's a problem. It's a problem because, you know, with it being his last film, and with some of the, you know, and I will say, like, there's actually a few things in the film. I'd say for me in particular, you know, there's probably two or three things that can show up on the internet that can, you know, in of the three, each one has a specific level of how badly it can ruin the film for somebody who hasn't seen it. So one of them's pretty high, one of them's in the middle, and one of them's not as bad. I mean, it's difficult to, you know, I've never had this many DMs in my life and people are like, what were your thoughts without telling me? I'm like, why do you fucking ask?
Yeah.
What did you think? But don't tell me what you thought.
We had a chat yesterday, didn't we? We just FaceTimed each other to catch up. And I think it was the same sort of thing, wasn't it? We just had a chat about how you found it, and I'd ask you questions and you'd sit there and have to look at me for a minute to work out how you're going to respond to
smile.
That without telling me what happens in the film. But so I want to know what happened with you. You managed to see the film same day as the premiere day, everything like that.
Yep.
Mr. What happened there.
Mr. David Zaritsky of the Bond Experience was kind enough to get me into a screening. And it was funny when he first called me and told me about it, we were trying to figure out what the closest big city was. Obviously, it's Detroit, but other than that, it was Chicago. So I was pretty convinced I would have to take, you know, the four and a half hour drive, or, you know, it's hard to justify flying there when you can drive there on, you know, half a tank of gas rather than fly there for 300. So I was convinced. And then I realized that Caleb was going, Commando Bond, and I reached out to him. I was like, which one are you going to? He's like, Windy City. I was like, well, I haven't got my invite yet, but I think we're going to be at the same place. Then sure as shit, it comes in. It's like, no, it's actually 20 minutes from your house for me. So, so David was kind enough to extend that invitation to me. So shout out to David, and as well as, like, you know, of course, MGM, Eon, and United Artists. And then it was a company called Allied Global Marketing here in Detroit that was more, you know, locally responsible. So that was pretty damn cool. But yeah, it makes, you know, I mean, spoiler wise, I'm glad I saw it. I'm glad I saw it before a lot of people. Yeah. But it makes life pretty damn difficult when a lot of people also haven't seen it. Like even my fiance, like, you know, I came home very somber for a lot of reasons. And she wanted to know why. I was like, I can't really tell you. And Lorenzo, who we miss, who's not on this episode, he basically didn't even give his fiance the time of day, because she was like, she'll see, she'll be able to pry it out of me. So I think he's hasn't spoken to her in like a week. I'm just kidding. Yeah. But
wow, I wonder how that's going for
dinner. Yeah. They're just sitting at dinner quiet, from what I understand. But yeah, so I mean, you know, yeah, but I mean, it was great to see it early like that. It was very special, but it's also very difficult to, you know, be surrounded by so many close friends and family that I can't talk to about it.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I think there's a few things. I actually came prepared to this podcast for once. You can tell that I've been off for a while, because nice. I reckon I'm more prepared for this one than I have been for any of the other ones.
If I couldn't see your face, I wouldn't know if this was even you or not.
Yeah, I know. So there was a few things that, obviously, it's been a while since we sort of spoke, that I wanted to pick your brains on, and I suppose I'm just going to interview you for the next 45 minutes or whatever. But
yeah,
in terms of the film, how did you actually find it? You know, we've waited 6 years. It's been a long time. Did it sort of scratch your Bond itch, come over any Bond fatigue, all of that sort of stuff, you know?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's hard, but for me, yeah, I actually thought it was excellent. I really did. You know, critically speaking, it's doing very well. It's like mid 80s on Rotten Tomatoes. I don't think it's going to stray too far from that score, which puts it at the third best of Craig's when it comes to critically speaking. But yeah, I mean, you know, the film was great. The acting was great. You know, one thing I've been saying a lot of is everybody's brought their A game to this film. And I don't know if they did it because they thought the script was so good, or if it was because it was Daniel Craig's last, but, everyone brought their A game. And, one thing that I feel like I noticed, and this is, you know, something you'll have to get back to me and tell me if you feel the same, but I noticed that, so a lot of times, like, say you're watching an interview with Brad Pitt or whoever, and they'll be like, yeah, you know, when I was playing this character, I gave him this backstory. So it's like they read the script, and then they create a backstory for the character so that they can better understand the character and play the character, right? And then some directors will give actors backstories. I can't remember which director, but a very well-known director, maybe Quentin Tarantino, I can't remember. But somebody will literally come up with backstories to all their characters to help the actors process. And I don't know if they did that with this film as far as each individual actor, but the way they portrayed each character, especially the new characters, you know, yeah. Nomi, Paloma, you know, even Safin, just it really seemed like their backstories shine through, if that makes any sense. Like it wasn't just a face value character that was doing X, Y, and Z. You kind of felt like you understood why they were doing or saying these things, or why they might act this way at first, then this way after it, you know. So that's one thing I felt like I noticed too, which is, I think, just goes to say how incredible the acting was.
So out of the new actors, because there were a lot, like, I feel like this is probably the film that had the most amount of new minor roles in it, if anything. Mm-hmm. Like, you think about Skyfall or even Spectre and that, like, there weren't that many people really introduced to it. Who would you say, was there, like, a standout for you that you would sort of say stole the show a bit for you?
Well, all the female characters were fantastic, and they rode the line, the very controversial line of, are they going to bring in female characters that outshine Bond? Are they going to be the equal to Bond, or are they going to be the typical, you know, inferior? I'll edit that shit out. Yeah. Or are they going to be inferior to Bond? And they were, in my opinion, equally all three, four, if you include Naomi Harris, all four of them were equally badass to Bond, in my opinion, especially Ana de Armas. I thought Ana de Armas's character was awesome. And her time in the film is they wrote her perfectly, I thought. Yeah. She is one of the characters who I thought her backstory shined through, because somebody asked me a question a day or two ago about what I thought about her character and some of her lines and why she did this and then this and whatever. And that's when it kind of hit me. I was like, I think that she kind of created a backstory for her character, and it showed.
Yeah, cool. I did see somewhere this morning that it's one of these, you know, absolute, it will never happen, but the critics want an Ana de Armas spin-off from it. You know, we're going down the Jinx thing again, but
yeah.
Can you understand why they're saying that? Like,
yeah, I mean, yeah, I can understand that, but you know, I think that has a lot to do with two things. Her character, without spoiling a whole lot, it's Ana de Armas. In any movie she's in, she's very charismatic, and she is in this film too. She's unbelievably charismatic, and you fall in love with her the second you see her. And that's strictly because she's Ana de Armas. Then the second she opens her mouth, you fall in love with her even more.
Yeah.
Donnie's going to have a field day with that sentence. And and so with that said, I get it, but you know, just all the interviews I've seen and everything that Barbara and Michael have been talking about, there's no way in hell anything like that's happening. Every single actor and every single producer and everybody, all the way from Barbara to Daniel to Lashana to Cary Fukunaga, it's all, we made this film for the cinema where it's meant to be seen, and any sort of spinoff, I don't see it being, you know, a cinema piece. I see it being Amazon Prime or whatever. And yeah, I think if they were going to do that, it would be with Lashana Lynch. If there's going to be a film spinoff, it would be with Lashana Lynch because what her character is. But I don't know. It just seems like Barbara and Michael, until they pass away, you know, because that's another scary thing too. Michael's like early 80s.
Yeah.
You know, Barbara's substantially younger than he is. She's in her early 60s, I think. But, you know, when it gets time when they're not able to do this anymore, it'll be very interesting where the character goes. And if you think about Daniel Craig's, it's been 15 years, been six years in between these two films alone. So it's like another 15 years. What is Michael going to be doing involvement wise in these films? So at that point in time, who knows? But anytime soon, I don't see any sort of spinoff, period.
Yeah, no, fair enough. You said about sort of Lashana Lynch there. I think she's probably what the most divisive character coming into this from 2021, you know, social justice warriors, all of that absolute rhetoric that was going around about that for probably a good part of what, 2 years, do you reckon?
Yeah.
Since it all got announced, like, just absolute madness on the internet that I think culminated in the picture of James Bond sitting on the back of a scooter with her riding.
Right. Like, right.
Fucking hell. When I saw that picture and just the comments that go with it was just mad, wasn't it? But how do you think she actually sort of came across in the film? And, you know, do you think that all of that was blown out of proportion, which I'm pretty sure was going to be a yes anyway, because of course it was, but how do you sort of think it actually played out when it came to the big screen and not being spread across newspaper?
So I can answer it very simply. It was anything you've seen or heard, like, for example, that picture of him on the back of the scooter.
Yeah.
It made perfect sense in the movie. That's why he's on the back of the scooter. You know, it's not just like him being like, oh, I'll ride bitch today. No, like once you see the scene, you'll be like, you know, the only hint I'll give you, it's not his scooter. It's her fucking scooter.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's the only thing I'll say. Spoiler alert. It's not his scooter. It's not Daniel Craig's fucking scooter. It's her scooter. So what's it going to be like? Move. You know what I mean? Like, you know, that's where it is comical to me, because I actually watched an interview today, and I can't remember if it was Daniel Craig's GQ thing or if it was something he was doing with, I think it was, but basically what he said was, James Bond's, you know, his outlook on the world and on women is questionable. And when he started doing the films, he didn't want it to be like that. Yeah. But even from Casino Royale until now, it's his outlook has changed, because I mean, even just looking at Bond and Casino Royale, like, he's naive, he's really rough around the edges, he, you know what I mean, And it's like, yeah. I picture like how he behaved towards M in that movie towards Spectre, even, you know, like, yeah. Like M, he was like, well, you know, 00s have a short life expectancy, and then come to Spectre and he's like standing up for himself and kind of, you know what I mean? Being like a little snarky and shit. You know, it's like, you know, that particular scene with the scooter, and people have said to me, people have DM'd me, like, I'm worried about the film. Is it going to be X, Y, and Z? It's like, you know, he's still James Bond. He's still going to be the hero. He's still the main character, but they found a way to give the female roles the credit they deserve. And then also just, you know, it's kind of like how Daniel Craig's been saying, no, a woman shouldn't be James Bond. They should be making parts just as good for women. You know what I mean? Make a different thing. You can make it identical to James Bond, but you don't need to turn James Bond into a woman. They did that with this film. They had four strong, strong female characters who were their own individual people who were equal to him rather than lesser than him. So that particular scene, like with the scooter, there may be one or two, maybe three scenes similar to that, but all three of them make complete sense. You know what I mean? It's, they kind of take the fact that he's always saving the world. He's killing everybody. He's doing everything. And they're like, well, you know, if he's facing that way and somebody's behind him, he should be dead. I mean, how many times do you watch a Bond film and think he should have been dead 40 times already? And we've only seen the movie, we're only 15 minutes in the movie. So this time it's like, you know, he's got people with him that can take care of themselves.
And I think that's probably good news, I think, for a lot of people, because I'd say that the build up to this, that fever pitch of James Bond's gone woke, and I hate that term because I think that realistically it means nothing in the way that middle-aged white men who are angry at the world are using it on Instagram. That has just gone absolutely mad. Like, and it's got to the point where it's just, you know, you stick a fucking picture up on Instagram and some random person who's not following you is seeking out those pictures to comment and talk about how they've ruined James Bond. And I think that the film actually coming out is just going to make that better. Like, it's just going to calm that down, because people are now not going to be reading things off newspapers who are creating clickbait, who are just wanting to create this fever pitch, watching YouTube videos that don't actually represent what the film is, because no one has seen it. So I think that by you saying that, that's nothing but good news. And it's where James Bond needs to go. Like, I'm sure that we can do a whole episode on this, and I'm sure we will once, you know, the film's been out a bit more widely on some of those female characters and that, but
Yeah. And I've spoken to a few of the, you know, the different women in our little Bond community, and all of them have been thrilled with how they're, you know, I can put it this way. Not one woman I've spoken to has had an issue with the characters, and not one man has had an issue with the female characters either. Yeah, so exactly. I think they did it perfectly. Yeah. I think they finally got it completely right.
There's no Severine moments
in the shower in this one.
Yeah. Okay, good. Cause the only people that are going to have issues with it are people who want to have issues with it now. Like, from the sounds of it, like I said, middle-aged white men who want to scream and shout and have an excuse to be racist a lot of the time and sexist, like, that's what you're seeing. But let's go to a lie tonight, shall we, because that all got real heavy real quick. So you said that Rotten Tomatoes, tomatoes, let's not get into that argument now, we don't have time. You said that where the sort of rating is, you reckon it's gonna end up about the third best Craig film.
So
yes, that's it for you.
Yeah, so as far as I'd have to look again, but I know Skyfall, or so I think Casino Royale is the highest, then Skyfall, both in the 90s, and then Quantum and Spectre are both in the high to mid 60s. Yeah. There's no way this one's going anywhere near the 60s. You know, it started off in the low 90s and it's made its way to the mid to low 80s, but it's fluctuating now, low to mid 80s. You know, some of these movies, and I was checking, it's interesting. It's an interesting thing to look into, because I looked at, you know, a movie like The Godfather had like 300 critic reviews, and then The Joker, or I should say Dark Knight, had about 300. But then you go to Black Widow that came out this year, and it's got like 8,000. So you're sitting here thinking, okay, how many more reviews are going to come in? But
because it's going to affect your average so much, isn't it?
Right.
If you got 8,000 compared to 300. Right.
But you know, with that said, I can guarantee you one thing: it's not going to go as low as Quantum and Spectre. So this will remain at, I'm safe to say it will be at least the third. If for some crazy reason it starts shooting back up, you know, I don't see it. It won't pass Casino Royale. Maybe Skyfall, but because at one point in time it was.
Yeah.
But you know, it'll get a good score. So for me, how does it rank? It's difficult to say.
Yeah. First viewing as well, I think.
Yeah, I've only seen it one time, you know, and I told you kind of what my personal experience was seeing it, with kind of some preconceived notions I had going into it.
Yeah.
Kind of somewhat distracting. So when I see it again, I can answer that better. But you know, I'm kind of somebody, before I joined this Bond community, I was very face value with the films. Like Spectre was the newest one, so it was the best one.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then it's like, now that I've been doing this for almost 2 years, that's not the case. But I think this film makes Spectre a better film. Okay. And, but I honestly think the ranking for me might actually be about right. I still think Casino Royale and Skyfall are one and two. This would be three. And then for me, Spectre and then Quantum. But, you know, one thing that it's melancholy.
Yeah.
That's the right word, because it's his last film. And, you know, you can kind of feel that throughout the entire film, even in the beginning. You know, you just know, you know, it's not, there's not going to be another Daniel Craig film. So for me, it's like there's a sadness to it. You know what I mean? Yeah. It could be the best film of all time. It could be the most happy. It could be like rainbows and sunshine and fucking birds chirping and shit. And I can still be like, but I'm sad about it. You know what I mean? So I don't know.
And I think that's one of the things that I reckon will change over time. Like once you're able to watch it online or watch it, you know, DVD, whatever it is, in 6 months' time, however long that might take, you're probably going to get over that, I'd say. Like, that's how I sort of, you know, it's like stage of grief, isn't it? Which is stupid because it's a James Bond film. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, that's how I think it will be, that eventually it will sort of sit in and that will be the end. It's like the last Pierce Brosnan one. It's, you know, probably for a lot of people who are older than us, I'd say, who have more of a memory and more of a interaction with the films at that time, they probably felt the same way then, whereas now they're able to look back on that and it's almost like let it sink in a bit. And then
I sort of
wonder if it's too quick to sort of
judge it. It definitely is. It felt like I got dumped. Mm-hmm. And I'm not even kidding. I had a sinking feeling, you know, like, God, man, I just wish I can go back to when Casino Royale came out. And I was literally telling my fiance last night, I was like, when Daniel Craig was flying across the Thames with his life jacket on and his long blonde hair, and people were shitting on him for having a life jacket on, shitting on him for being him, shitting on him for his hair. I remember being so pissed. And I've said this is going to be the next tag story for me, because I've told this one before too, but I remember being enraged, absolutely enraged. But then by the time Casino Royale came out, and then by the time I had it on DVD, I had two of my friends over at my house. We were watching it in the basement. And one of them started like teasing me about Daniel Craig. And I literally whipped like a ceramic square coaster, like at his fucking head. And I'm like the least violent human alive. And I was like, fuck you. You know what I mean? I remember hitting the wall, because I was like, this is James Bond. So the funny thing is, when Pierce Brosnan filmed his last scene, no one knew it was his last scene. Barbara and Michael may have known. He didn't. So not only is the whole marketing campaign based on this being his last film, and you can feel that from A to B in the film, it's like, even before the film came out, we're all seeing this documentary of him saying goodbye to the cast and crew, and even going as far as to show exactly what his last scene is.
Yeah.
Which, of course, is barely even an hour into the movie. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like, you know, holy shit. Like, they're already just bringing the hype all around it, but it's like, it's a bittersweet hype.
You know, like, they should have, like, in hindsight now, do you reckon they should have released that documentary after the film? Like, I know when it came out that everyone was excited because it was new Bond content, but now that you've actually seen it, do you think that the Being James Bond documentary could have waited? Shit, it was like a week before the film, wasn't it? It wasn't even that long, so.
I don't know. For me, I'm kind of indifferent.
Yeah, okay.
Because, you know, it's like, for me, like, yeah, after, you know, I left seeing the film and came home, like, I was super sad and, you know, it was bittersweet, like I said, because it was his last one. And but I wouldn't have felt better knowing, like, in a week I get to see this documentary, because it's like, I went into it having seen the documentary, you know, because I'm sitting here saying to myself, like, it's just a movie. He's just a guy. Like, it's just Daniel Craig. Like, he's going to be making $2 billion, trillion doing Knives Out 2 and 3. And then he's telling people if Ryan Johnson will do a 4 and a 5, he'll do a 4 and a 5. Like, it's like, he's not going anywhere. But
he is, though, isn't he? That's the thing.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
When you're in the actual cinema and you're watching it, he is. Because he's not just Daniel Craig anymore. And that's why we do these podcasts and why we... Mm-hmm. YouTube videos and spend way too much time, because it's not just Daniel Craig, is it? Like, yeah.
That's the scariest part. The scariest part to me is, you know, and I've told David Zaritsky this a million times, and I'll say it till I'm blue in the face. You know, I went from a kid watching David's YouTube videos through Remmert's website and James Bond Lifestyle, you know, seeing him and Joe Darlington and Harris Thomas and all these guys, shout out to all those great dudes. But it wasn't until Casino Royale came out that I discovered any of that stuff. Yeah. So it's like Daniel Craig introduced so much to Bond and Bond fans, all the sartorial items, all the content, all. And it's like, yeah, it's the day and age, you know, but a big fear of mine is the next Bond going to have as much sartorial items? Yeah. Is there going to be as much to talk about? Is it going to be as big of a deal? You know what I mean? I certainly hope so, because if not, like, that's also scary to me.
It's like going into the unknown, isn't it? Because we definitely haven't been through this stage before.
Mm-hmm.
So someone like David has been, and probably has more of an idea, has a memory at least of what happens between actors and how, you know, what he's going to at least do. We know what David's like. He's probably got 300 plans up his sleeve of what he's going to do in the next
75 year. Videos in queue.
Yeah, that's it.
But videos with me and you that we didn't even know we filmed.
Whereas for us, we've known Craig when it comes to the Instagram, the podcast and things like that. That's what we talked about. Like, in essence, we set up this podcast in the build up to No Time to Die. And now it's like, right, where's the next 2 years go? And that, like, it's exciting, but it's also like, shit. What happens if they cast someone, you don't like them? Like,
yeah,
I know that's the most sort of basic way of saying it, but that's already started as well. And that's a probably frustrating thing, I'd say, that how many pages have you seen? It was like half an hour into the Royal premiere, and then it's like, who's going to be the next James Bond? Mm-hmm. And it's like, fuck, let's enjoy this for a minute. We've waited this long. But,
well, Barbara and Michael said that too. They're not even going to start looking until next year. And you know, let's be real, they're producers. They've got their eyes on people they want to see. Maybe they've seen them before. Yeah. Someone like Henry Cavill, he's auditioned before, you know, and I'm sure he'll come back, whether he's top of their list, bottom of their list, or not on their list, he'll be back to audition.
Yeah.
But, you know, the thing I was going to say too is, it's just like, I remember, you know, when he was cast, hating it. And then now it's like, I wish I could go back to it, you know, because it's just very scary to, you know, the unknown and who's coming next and what it's going to be like. And is this, you know, what we do, the podcast and the Instagram and the YouTube, is it going to be just so blissful with material, or is it going to be, we're stretching back to Casino Royale now because there's nothing new, or, Yeah, yeah. It's scary. Scary as hell. Yeah.
No, of course it is, but we'll work it out, I'm sure. And if we don't,
I hope so.
I don't know.
Then this is going to turn into like a Star Wars podcast or something.
I'm not doing Star Wars.
Every 5 minutes, there's a new TV show.
Let's do a Lost podcast. I reckon that's fairly current. God. We'd have
it was
more
all a dream.
Oh, I said no spoilers. So one of the things that you sort of touched on there as well that I know is one thing that we definitely share and a lot of other people do is sort of the sartorial side of the film. Not a spoiler, because I think David mentioned it yesterday, and there's nothing really new in the film from what we've seen.
Not a speck of clothing, I don't think. I think the one thing I noticed was when he rips the cover off the V8, you see him, it turns, it's a weird, you'll see in the film, it's a very weird shot. And that goes without saying. You'll even think it the second you're like, the fuck just happened? But when he rips the cover off the V8 and he starts to make his way around to get in, the camera shows a back angle and you can see the jeans a lot better.
Okay.
And, you know, I mean, they're definitely like a darker navy jean, but just the material, or I shouldn't say the material, obviously it's denim, but just the way it's made, it's a very, very specific type of denim.
Yeah. And, okay.
And, that was probably the only thing I noticed that I was like, oh, that's somewhat new.
How did we go with the palladiums in the end? Because I know that that was probably one of the most debated things. Did you get a good look of them?
No. Has
there been? No?
No. 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 So I think the rumor with that is I think it is the boot that I bought, the Pampa Lux waterproof. Mm-hmm. But the color I bought is not right. I think I saw the color on AJB at some point in time, and I think I've had them for like almost a year now. So there was that. And then, I think it's a different color completely, but no, I don't, this is something I'd have to see it again, but I'm 99% sure you don't see shit.
Yeah, no, fair enough. And were there any pieces in there that stood out to you more now that you've seen them in the film? Any pieces that you want to buy, any pieces that you thought weren't used enough? How did you sort of feel about that side of things?
Well, not to my surprise, he wears the shit out of the duster. You know, of course he does.
How are you feeling about that? Would you go out? Is that making you more tempted? No.
My thing is like, you're going to spend that kind of money on something. I just start looking into the suits or even the watch or something, you know? Mm-hmm. But the Connolly times Finnemore thing, that now that Connolly Finnemore, now that that's actually, I don't know if it's a full production, but you can buy that again. That is out. You can buy that on Connolly's website. That is something. And then of course the NPL like commando sweater is pretty nice. I've actually kind of really re-fallen in love with the watch and wouldn't mind getting my hands on that watch.
Yeah, no, I have an awful feeling that I'll be pretty much the same. Like, I think when it comes to the clothes, I know that shirt, because I was looking into that, and it's just the Connolly version, isn't it, without the Finnemore crossover, so they're not using their fabric. So.
Yeah.
So, like, to be honest, much of a muchness. I know diehards will say different.
Still, this is still pretty expensive. I think it's still the same price.
It's still like £450, I think, if I'm right.
It's like almost $600.
Yeah, exactly. But I think, that duster, I know that, I don't know. I think this might be something that's more me and you with how we dress day to day. I don't know where I'm wearing that. I'm not putting that coat on to go out. But I think it'll be interesting. I'm looking forward to seeing what the clothes actually look like.
Yeah, it just reminds me, like if I were to buy the duster or if you were to buy it, and this is no offense to you, I'm just saying people I know in person, I mean, David has it and I've seen the videos. I think it looks great on David. If I were to buy it, it would just be Beverly Hills Cop sitting in the strip club. Hey, you see those guys over there with the trench coats? Yeah. Well, it's June.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, it's one of those things. They'd be like, the fuck are you wearing this for?
Yeah. And so, on that, with the, I don't know if you and Lorenzo have spoken about this because, I'm like I said, it's been a while. But the MPL combat trousers,
mm-hmm.
how are you feeling about them? Are they something that you'd go out and buy and wear?
Mm-mm.
Nah.
No, just because I wouldn't know where to wear them, you know?
Yeah.
You know, like Lorenzo, I think wants to get his hands on them because I think he can wear them to work. And in fairness to him, he has a job where he can wear them to work, but they're not going to get dirty. Like they'll serve a purpose and he also doesn't have to worry about damaging them. And, you know, next time we talk, well, I'll have him elaborate more, but, no, it's just, you know, and it was same with the Danner boots. Like I have black boots and then like I bought those Palladiums and then my fiance last year bought me black Sperry boots. So between the two, to add a third boot to the rotation where I'm not doing anything in my life other than walking out in the snow.
Yeah.
I don't need three boots. And in fairness, and this is something Lorenzo and I did speak about, I had no idea what the price point was. They were dirt fucking cheap. They were like less than $200 US. What's and that, I had no idea the Danner boots were. Yeah. And now they're like, I saw one for $1,100 on eBay yesterday.
Yeah, they were probably one of the only things that I was tempted to get. But once again, that's probably because I'd get more use out of them at work, where they're a weird thing because for people who maybe don't wear tack boots at work or have that sort of use, like tack boots aren't comfy. They're not really
right.
They are to an extent.
It's kind of like a foot cast.
Well, it's like, I don't know. I'd struggle to think, right, I'm going out for a walk. I'm going to take the dog out for a walk. I'll put a full pair of tack boots on. Like,
you're tying your shoes for like 15 minutes.
Oh, no. Like, it's just, I don't know. And some people I'm sure can get away with them with jeans. I probably wouldn't. But that's, you know, like it's difficult. I don't know. And yeah, I was 50-50 on them, but I was sort of thinking, oh, I'll try and get them. But yeah, it was the middle of the night in Australia. I was asleep.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was something we talked about, Lorenzo and I, on the last episode we released. Danner's, as good of a company and as good of a brand as they are, their launch wasn't the best.
No, it was awful. You know? Like, I don't think they sort of expect, I don't know. You sometimes see that with the brands. They don't understand how much power James Bond actually has. Like, this wasn't just the James Bond sickos who wanted to go out and buy these boots. There was probably, you know, it was in Forbes. It was in all of these magazines about you can now buy the boots. People will go and buy them. Just, you know, but.
Well, it's funny too, because it's not the first time a boutique-ish brand. I mean, and they're not even as small as the brand I'm going to reference, but how can they unsuccessfully pull off the launch, but somebody like RGT, who the second everybody knew what that was, I had no problem buying it.
Yeah.
No problem whatsoever. And then it started to come out that it's been that jacket's been in 4 or 5 different films. Like, I think it's like, I've seen like female, you know, actresses wearing a version. And like, I want to say like Chris Evans or some, like it's been in like five or six films. You know what I mean? It's like, but it's still there. I can get it right now. I got it a year ago. I can, you know, and there's when my fiance and I were in Columbus last October, we walked into this like boutique kind of denim store and they had it sitting there. They had a bunch of RGT shit. And like David Zaritsky has mentioned, it's a husband and wife, I think, who own RGT. Yeah. And if you order from them, you become very familiar with them as a couple and as a brand. Yeah. And he was like, yeah, they're great. This guy in Columbus, he's like, they're great. They're, you know, they're really excited. They're in the new Bond film and blah, you know what I mean? It's like
the fact that I could go into somewhere in Australia and it was the exact same conversation of, it was like one of these boutique sort of places, very similar to some RGT stuff. And I bought my jacket from there and the bloke talks with the owners every day to sort out stock and things like that. And he's like, he was once again talking about the James Bond film and about the owners being excited. And that's the other side of the world. Like, yeah, good brand. A shame that it wasn't in the film a bit more from what I hear. Mm-hmm. Like, it sounds like it's in a shot and then it's gone, which is a shame. But yeah.
It's funny too, because they released something similar and it's got a very specific name as far as the knit or weave or however you want to call it. But yeah. I saw it and it's kind of like a waffle. It was like a navy, but it was like a waffle looking, kind of like a, almost like a thermal type looking, you know, and it's not a print. It's how it's sewn. And I was like, that is awesome. And I went to the website, that shit was sold out in like 5 minutes. And I was like, that's crazy to me. You know what I mean? Like, so, but yeah.
Right.
That's that.
Less power on. So there's only a few more things I reckon that we can touch on before. I know we could talk about this for the next 3 hours, but I feel like we're
people. Like it's like a therapy session again for me.
Yeah, that's it. So we did have the actual royal premiere in between sort of last episodes of this podcast. How did you find the whole spectacle of that? Obviously, we weren't there, but, you know, pictures, live streams, things like that.
I mean,
how do you reckon it stacked up?
Yeah. You know what? I will say this. It wasn't as, you know, monumental to me as the Skyfall one, because I think they must have had some precautions in place. There wasn't anywhere near as many fans surrounding it. And I just remember watching that one and like the Royals walked the red carpet and every cast member was there. Like Billy Magnuson wasn't there. Ralph Fiennes wasn't there. I think that was really the only two. Like Judi Dench was there. And of course I'm drawing a blank on her real name, but Wei Lin, that actress was there. So, I mean, it was still awesome. You know what I mean? Like I'm just glad as long as they continue to do that, you know, and this isn't even a goal I'm setting. This is a thing. I am going to be at the next one. I just pray to God that it's like that again. I hope they continue that tradition.
We'll be there. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Like it's, you know, it's going to be at least 3 years at least. Yeah. So
we got time.
We're going to be there. Yep. You know, I don't want to hear any bullshit from anybody. I've already told Brianne it's happening, whether you like it or not. Obviously she'll probably come, but that's another thing too. I feel like if I was in London and saw this film with everybody, I wouldn't have been as melancholy as I have been. That's become the word of the day for me for about 4 days now.
Yeah, no, 100%. I think it was interesting because, so I had a look into it because I thought the same, that the premiere looked quieter. And it's just because they weren't, you basically weren't allowed to line the red carpet. So they stopped that and it was, you know, emergency workers, things like that, really good reason to do it, like a good cause, things. Yeah, I agree. And it was weird because it was almost like some of the guests became the crowd, if that made sense. Like, walking through.
Yeah.
And that, obviously, people were excited to see and things like that, but that didn't feel like, that's not how it sort of felt like it should be. It should be, you know, I don't know, random people standing on the side screaming, see Daniel Craig, and that's great. And then, the people who are going to the premiere.
Yeah. So, well, like I explained it to Brianne. I was like, it's like this like 4 hour thing when there's so many people and it's not like a carpet. It's a street that's got red carpet. Like it's like there, it takes Daniel Craig probably a good hour to make his way from where he pulls up. And I don't think he even pulled up this year. I think he was already there and came walking out from
he did
that the building was, itself
because
which was different
that, that's where that because the footage of him coming down the steps I think that's
that picture I like, posted
if you I've been to the Albert Hall probably 10 times like it's where we used to go on school trips in England, like that's where we'd go, and it's massive in terms of that strip where that is, because that goes straight down into Albert Park and it's huge. Like it's like you said, it's probably a K long between that where they actually had that cordoned off down to the end. So yeah, it's interesting. Albert Hall, I know why they do it there, but I'd still reckon that is probably one of the worst places to go and see a film or anything like that. Like,
yeah, that's what it kind of sounds like.
It's good to obviously be the premiere and that, but I can understand why a lot of the blokes who went over there for it then went and saw the film again the day after, because not the best place to actually see
things,
if that makes sense.
Yep. And it doesn't surprise me that a lot of people were holding off on doing any sort of review or real comments until seeing it again. And that's another thing. Like, you know, I've had like I said, I've had people DM me and ask me about it. And if it's people I don't usually talk to regularly, most of the people who do DM me, even if it's not somebody like you and I, it's somebody that I speak to somewhat often, even if it's just them asking me questions. But if it's somebody more like, you know, you or Lorenzo or different people that, you know, I speak to daily, I've kind of said like, you know, I need to see it again. You know what I mean? And it's like, it's funny too, because my fiance said, she's like, aren't you excited? You know, now that you've seen it and everyone's going to see it, you'll have so much to talk about. And this, I was like, but it's almost like, you know, there's really not that much to talk about. It's like, once we've all seen it, we can dissect it. We can talk about it. But then it's like, we have to look towards the future now. You can't just sit and talk about this one movie, because the thing is, like you said, and like you heard from David's thing, there are no new clothes. You know, there's nothing, you know, we could, it would be us talking about the story for 2 years. So you know what I mean? It's just not going to happen. So that's another scary thing, is it's like, I just pray to God that when the next Bond is announced and they hit the ground running with the next script, that, you know, we can just start getting these a little more frequently and start, you know what I mean? We're going to have to get creative here for quite some time.
I think we will. And I think, hopefully we'll have some more people on. I know there's a few people that we've lined up to talk to again. People who weren't able to talk until the film was actually out, people like that, who we're hoping to get on. So it'll be a probably different look to how things are done. I reckon we probably got 2 months maybe of talking about this film once everyone's seen it, going into it, doing some deep dives, and then that's where we actually have to be creative.
And I was thinking like how I did that keep or kill thing with David, and I was like, you know, I want, when I was doing it, I was like, I wonder if once the film comes out, we can do like a part two. Like that's done. You know what I mean? Because we did all, you know, it was a bunch of Daniel Craig. I think it was, it was Keep or Kill for Daniel Craig. It wasn't a specific film. So I don't know, man. It's just, it's just an interesting place to be. And when we do what we do every day, and, you know, it's like, I was thinking about it 10 minutes before you and I got on to do this. I was like, I think about James Bond like 20 hours out of my day. Seriously. It's ridiculous. It's like, when you and I do what we do, this film, the stakes are just so much higher for you and I and Lorenzo and everybody that we hang, you know, from this community. It's just a completely different experience for us. And with that said, it's like, you know, now that this film's out, it's like, I'm already looking at, what do we do for the next year? How do we, you know, create content? And we're going to be creative between the three of us. And I'm not worried about what we're going to do, but it's like, I'm not sitting here as much as like, oh, I want to see it again. And then again, and then again, and then again. And then I'll be like, but did you see that the brick on this building was actually green and not teal?
No one needs that, do they?
Like, right. No. That's, you know, it's like, I'm sitting here thinking like, I just hope to God that they continue with the Craig vibe as far as, you know, the fanfare and the sartorial items and the marketing, and you know what I mean? I just want Bond to always stay Bond. You know, it's gotten bigger and bigger and bigger, and let's just keep doing that.
And I'll be happy. No, 100%. I think that's a good thing. I have one last thing that I want to bring up before we wrap this up.
Well, I have a question for you too when we're done.
Yeah, okay, because I'm still angry about this, right? This has really got nothing to do with the film. But this Aston Martin Mini, you know, the toy car thing that they've brought out. Why?
Like where you can like get a part every couple months or whatever it is.
No. You know, that one that's like fucking £120,000 for the kid. You know, what's it? Is it an Aston Martin? I'm pretty sure it's called the Aston Martin Mini. It's like a kid's car thing that they actually sit in.
Oh, and like kind of like a, like, is it like electric?
Yeah. And it has like all the James Bond parts in it from the new film.
What the hell? What color is it? Silver?
It's the DB5. You know, the toy car. Fuck, I'm not explaining.
I haven't seen it. I haven't even seen it.
Wait. This is gonna have to be some editing.
Maybe your scales are off.
Tiny cars. It's called Aston Martin Junior. That's the one. DB5 Junior.
Oh, here it is. This is over $100,000.
Yep. So that was a thing that I posted a while ago on my Instagram that asked, would you rather have one of these for your kid to sit in or five Toyota Corollas?
Oh my God. I'm on the website right now. Holy shit. This is no joke. This thing is no joke.
I am so angry by this. I don't know why.
It's barely smaller than the real car, though. It's like half size of the real car.
Yeah.
Like in this video, it's the dad and the kid sitting in it, and the kid's driving.
Are you sure? Because I've never seen an adult sitting in one of them.
Yeah, no, I'm looking at the DB5 Junior.
Yeah, okay. So yeah, there's a special DB5. But,
okay, here, let's see if we can figure out if we're looking at the same thing. Does it look like if you were just looking at a picture, it could be the real thing until you realize it's
yeah, not? Yeah. That's the thing, because it's actually made by Aston Martin. So it's made by Aston Martin. It's like this electric toy car, basically. And they bought out a special one for No Time to Die where, you know, it's got all the same gadgets and that on it. I don't know why. It just makes me so angry. Who is buying this? Like, no one's rich buying this people. For their child. No one's buying this for their child.
Hey, Dad. I want to be like James Bond. Can you buy me this £90,000 DB5?
I don't know. I was
dead.
I saw it and I was just fuming. So I just wanted to bring that up.
Yeah, it's interesting because before we move from this topic, I have to look at this picture and see who this person is. Okay. So they've got the advertisement is two kids sitting in the car, and then behind them is the dad with an actual Aston Martin.
He's wearing the Connolly.
He's wearing the fucking Matera outfit.
Yeah.
Oh
yeah,
my God. I saw it from afar and I was like, is they really got Daniel Craig to do this shit?
No. Even he is like, this is too excessive for children.
Yeah.
The man who wears, you know.
Ooh. One other thing too. The Connolly, that sweater jacket or something, that grew on me a lot after seeing the film.
Okay. That's good because that was one of the ones that we were both.
Yep.
50-50 on.
That's a hell of an outfit. And it's you know, I don't know if you want to call this a spoiler, but I think people knew this by now because I think he in spy shots, but he's wearing like a short sleeve Henley underneath.
Yeah, and it's a long sleeve one by what's its name? Have you seen about this? So it's made by the same people that did his
Rag and Bone
for the Royal Premiere. It's
I just saw it.
Anderson and Shepherd. So basically Anderson and Shepherd make that polo, but it's a long sleeve polo. And then the costume department has altered it to make it short sleeve.
Really?
Yeah. And it's not a cheap, polo by any stretch of the imagination. So that will be one interesting thing to keep an eye on if that then becomes part of their line, because so at the moment you cannot buy that polo as is.
Yeah, well, Rag and Bone makes a Henley that's, you know, obviously basically identical to that with already short sleeve for probably 90.
Yeah, because I think if you actually look at the material, this one's like knitted compared to the Rag and Bone one, which is like a cotton, but much for muchness, like.
Yeah,
you're not going to buy one that's £350 and take it to a tailor and be like, sleeves off.
remove my sleeves now. Right.
I think we have absolutely banged on. You have one last question, I think.
Yeah, I've got one for you. And this is going to be an interesting one since I've seen it. What are you expecting? What are you expecting? And what are you hoping for? And those can be two different things. What do you think is going to happen? And what do you want to happen in this film?
So I think one of the worst things about having this film delayed is that your mind continuously gets changed on what you're expecting from the film. Realistically, if I wait to see this in cinemas, which is in another 6 weeks, I'll know everything in this film now. There's spoilers on YouTube. There's people who are sitting in cinemas filming important scenes and putting it as the descriptions. I've seen one of them. It hasn't ruined the film for me. It's made me annoyed that I know certain bits of it. I know there's other people in Australia who feel the same, talking to other people. It's frustrating. But I don't know. I think one thing that definitely isn't a spoiler that I know that a lot of people are saying is that the film is more story driven than a lot of the other ones. And I think that some of the trailers didn't really do that as well. They didn't explain how story driven this might be. So for me, I'm excited by that because that's the part of James Bond that I like, probably over the action sort of stuff. So yeah, I feel weird about this film now. Like, now that it's actually real, now that people have actually seen it and that it's not just snippets of a 3-minute trailer, it feels weird. And like, I probably feel like how you did a week ago about this film. And it's, I don't know. And it's, it shouldn't work out when you're going to get to see it, how you're going to see it. Try and avoid what you can. Like, do you completely shut yourself off from, I don't know, the internet for the next 6 weeks? Do you just sort of try and avoid it? I don't know. But all that I hope for the film is that it's just a good swan song. Like, close things off, have it finished. Like, we've banged on about it, but Daniel Craig's our James Bond. Finish it well and I'll be pretty happy, to be honest. I think, you know, and hopefully it will scratch that Bond itch for the next 2 to 3 years.
75 years.
You know, we've waited 6 years for this. I don't reckon there's going to be as long a gap between the next film, but have us leave me sort of feeling happy about where the films are, and that will get me through to the next one.
Yeah, I agree. I think what, you know, for me, it's the one thing that I've never felt in my life until after seeing this film was how badly I wish I could just have a conversation with Michael, Barbara, Daniel, and Carrie. So I have a few questions, and one of them, it's not even film. I just want to know, how long do you plan on doing this?
Yeah.
Because I don't think I could ever tolerate, you know, a life where there's not a new Bond film coming out soon. You know what I mean?
I don't reckon that's, I reckon that I don't reckon that that's ever going to happen. Not in our lifetimes anyway.
I hope not. But I mean, in fairness to that comment too, I mean, it took 15 years, 6 years for this film to come out after Spectre. So yeah, like, you and I could be 80, 90, and we've only seen 4 more films. So.
That is
one film every 15 years.
We will be stretched for content then.
We will
be doing the Lost spin-off podcast by then, just to keep in contact, I reckon. Yeah.
So Jake and I watched Dr. No backwards, and here's what happens.
The story is actually weirdly similar backwards. It is forward. It is.
And Ursula Andress is not naked backwards. She's not naked forward, and she's not naked backwards. I don't understand what exactly happened here.
Well, I reckon we have chatted shit for long enough again. It's good to be back.
Hell yeah, man. Glad to have you back.
Yeah, we'll keep going.
Keep on keeping on. Good to see you, buddy. And everybody, thank you guys for tuning in, and we'll catch you again, as usual, next week.
Yeah, cheers.